You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Well, I'm very pleased to have Senator Pauline Hanson along. Pauline, if I might, or Senator, welcome to the show.
Pauline is quite all right with me. Forget about the Senator bit.
All right. I'm never sure the correct protocols, but I will say you're a senator, of course, in Queensland, and was just over there recently with my wife. You are in an amazing part of the country, as you well know.
Well, it started in 1996 on my foray into politics, and of course John Howard threw me out of the Liberal Party, and I stood as an independent to go on to win the seat with the biggest swing in the nation on one issue, calling for equality for all Australians. So since then my life has been tied up in politics, really, since that time, even though I was out of politics for 18 years.
Oh, and still a senator now, and a strong yeah. voice, which is one of the reasons we wanted to interview you here, because you cut to the chase, no BS, which is a welcome thing in politics. And I know a lot of my listeners are really interested in the Labor government is doing, but what's happening in Australia around the likes of, you've got a digital ID bill that they're trying to put through at the moment, and also a push for the central bank digital currency. Tell us what's happening in that space.
Well, the digital ID, and they said, look, won't have any effect on you whatsoever, but we're seeing the effects of it now, where the governments are forcing you to go through the government government website, and it's actually, if you don't go onto it, you're not going to get information. That's exactly what's happened with people with their superannuation at the moment, that if you want information, if you've got more than one super plan in Australia, you've got to go onto the government site and register to actually see this. So they're forcing you down the line that you've got to actually have this to get information. And nothing, I think if we realise what happened to us during COVID and you're forced, you couldn't get into restaurants, pubs, clubs, you couldn't have meetings, go anywhere unless you had your digital ID, and that's basically what it was. And it's going to be a form of control. And later on down the track, what they're looking at now is 30-minute cities in Australia. So in Sydney, they're looking at the north side of Sydney, the central and the western side and southwest, whereas they're going to control your movements of where you go. And I believe it'll be similar to what they're doing in London now. And I don't know if people know, you have congestion tax in the heart of London. Fair enough, they've had that for years. Now they've introduced emissions targets. So if you've got a car over 10 years old, you pay £12.50 a day to actually take your car out on the road. Now they've extended that right out to the edge of the motorways. So a lot of people are furious about it. And they're actually looking at in London or in England, 15-minute cities. So this is happening around, you know, parts of the world, and people must be mindful of it. It's about controlling the people. Those people who are lower social economic class of people will not be able to afford these new cars they're forcing you into, where it's your movements, where you travel, where you go, what you eat. It's all going to be controlled under this digital ID, and those people who are well-to-do will be able to pay for what they want.
You touch on a multiplicity of good points. So we've got the same debate around congestion charges here, Senator, and that actually it's not going to affect the wealthy. They can choose, if you will, when to travel into Auckland City, but it's all the tradies, electricians, the plumbers are going to get hit for just trying to do their job. And then the second thing you're saying, so the government's just funneling all the information through itself. I mean, it's got sort of a bit of echoes of the communist China's big on this too. They make sure all the data's collected and you have to stay in line.
Of course. Do you know, I spoke to a Chinese woman just about 2 months ago, and she said, I came back from China. Do you know, in China, she said, everyone has to read the propaganda of the newspaper that's put out by China, and you must go online by that night, a certain time at night, and you must answer the questions. If you don't, you're actually followed up by the Chinese government. So it's about understanding their propaganda. People must answer the questions. It's controlling the populace, controlling the plebs, and that's exactly where we're headed. People must understand, open up, understand what's happening around you, and start taking an interest in politics, and know, you know, and vote for the right people who are going to represent you and maintain our democracy and our freedom of speech.
So do you think, picking out of the Australian context, a lot of this has come out of COVID, or rather government, saw they could get away with quite a lot of control and coercion and said, hey, let's follow this up with the likes of this digital ID bill in cashless societies?
I think it's been in planning for a long time. It just hasn't happened overnight. And I think that COVID was part of it as well. And people had the attitude here, oh, well, they kept us safe. But since that's happened now and the government refuses to have a Royal Commission into the COVID and how it was handled by the states and by the health bureaucrats and the premiers, they've actually shut it down. They won't be answerable to the public. So that's why the people are very, I'd say, very conscious of what happened during COVID. They don't want like the digital ID, and they don't want the other one, which is misinformation and disinformation bill.
Well, talk us through that, because actually, well, firstly, we had similar issues here. We had two classes of society, and our then Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern was in front of media saying she's quite happy to create two classes of people, which is terrible. But
really? It's just a bit, said that. My God, she's supposed to be a prime minister for all the people and saying she doesn't care about forming two classes of people. I don't understand their attitude. They are not, you know, representing the people of your nation. You know, I sort of have the same attitude here towards my our own prime minister here. I think he's got no backbone. I think he's pathetic. He's no leader. He can't answer questions. And people are fed up with it. So, where do we go from here?
Well, you just said then, though, that there's no COVID inquiry. Did I hear you right? Of all the stuff that Australians like Kiwis have been through, there is no Royal Commission, no inquiry into how Australia handled COVID?
No, they're refusing to have it. So anyway, the Prime Minister put up his little bit of an inquiry. It was pathetic. You know, the terms of reference were nowhere near what we needed. We need to have full investigation. Why did the government absolutely guarantee these companies, Pfizer and Moderna and AstraZeneca? Why did they indemnify them against any problems? We've had over 140,000, that was going back over a year ago, of adverse side effects to having the injection. We didn't have people who had autopsies done. They'll only declare about 14 people actually died from having the injection. We've got people now with health issues that are now due to, I believe, having that injection. Then you got people who were doctors, nurses, paramedics, firefighters, police, everyone else that have lost their jobs because they didn't get the shot and are still persecuted because of that. So we are short on these essential services, these personnel who can do the job, but they can't because they're still being persecuted over not having the jab.
Very similar dynamics, Pauline, still in play in New Zealand. In fact, during the government was making a lot of decisions about healthcare workers, defence staff, and actually those that challenged the government have pretty much won all their court cases. And we do have an inquiry, but it's still very amorphous. The government's sort of downplaying it. Though I see, if I might, barring it into your local politics, that old, dare I mention his name, Dan Andrews, and is it Mark McGowan, got royal honours? Can't believe it.
Either can the people of Australia, unbelievable. And what they were responsible for in their own states, especially Daniel Andrews, you know, what he's done to the state, ran it into the ground. He's actually controlled the media, controls everything that happens there. The people just feel like they're in a communist state and, you know, constantly say to me, please come down here and sort out Victoria. We're in one hell of a mess here. So I get it all the time. I was just over in WA. And, you know, the same thing, people are just fed up with the Labor governments here, and it's become such a socialist country in so many ways, head down the path of socialism and communism and taking away the rights of people. Even the whole thing, look, I can go on and on about so many issues.
Well, jump back to one you just touched on briefly. You talked about this new law that the government's putting around. Is it communications legislation, something about disinformation and misinformation? Yeah. Is this like a hate speech law or something they're trying to pass to control
Correct.
What you think and say?
Misinformation and disinformation bill. Now, remember, even with the digital ID, this was actually brought in under the coalition government. So it's just not Labor. Labor's continued with it. So under the misinformation, disinformation bill since 2019, it was introduced by the former government under Morrison, and they wanted to introduce this. Now Labor has taken it up, and it's meant that They want to control what goes up on social media outlets and what's been said. Though you won't have a voice. So it can only be controlled by the government, what information they put out there, or two international interests, like in international organisations to do with health and education. So basically everything else, you're going to be shut down. So you won't be able to have an opinion with it. And we're looking at fines, or your media outlets are going to be shut down.
God help us. Well, we had, again, it's going back to COVID times. I mentioned what the Prime Minister said about two classes of people, but she also stood in the Parliament's podium and told us that the government, would be the only source of truth, which is still just, we've been battling similar things here, hence, yeah.
Same thing, exactly what they're saying over there. And isn't it funny? You know, why is everyone thinking about on the same lines? And the only thing that this, you know, rings a bell in my head is that it's coming from the UN. This has been a plan that's been put in place for Western civilized countries to actually follow this course, not to, you know, China. They'll never do anything like this. It's about controlling the populace in the direction that they want. And years ago, when I first came into politics, it was all about the one world government. They all laughed at that. But that's exactly where we're headed. And I don't believe that we should be still associated with the UN, with WHO, even now at the moment, WHO, they're looking at doing a international pandemic treaty. So that's falling over a little bit. A lot of countries are pulling out of it because they're not happy with it. And we can't allow other international interests have no association with Australia to be telling us how to run our country. I'm very adamant. We vote in our politicians, we have our own parliaments, we have our own governments. We should, under our own sovereignty, having a say over our country, not international interests.
Yeah, well, I'm out of New Zealand politics now, and, you know, used to do a lot of foreign affairs, defence, intelligence stuff. Long and short, happy to talk to other countries, but New Zealand's a sovereign nation. We make our own decisions. It's the same as Australia. You make your decisions, we'll make ours, we'll talk, but we don't want international bodies telling us what to do. And I do worry at times of how desperate these international bodies are to have a say in everybody else's lives. I mean, speaking of that, you've touched China a couple of times. We've just had you've had it too. You've had the Premier come and visit you and give Australia some pandas. We've had him down here too. But, I mean, is China seen as a major, threat or issue to Australia?
The government is trying to make out that it doesn't. You know, we have trade relations with them. We actually talked and have a working relationship. Let me tell people my opinion. They are not our friends. They never will be. They have a different view of how things should run, and that's controlling the people run by a communist organisation, a dictatorship. That's not our standard. The trouble is that years ago it started under the Lima Declaration. Are you aware of the Lima Declaration?
I'm not. Yeah. Now you put me on the spot.
Okay. All right. The Lima Declaration was signed in Peru in 1976, and the Lima Declaration was to forego countries like Australia, New Zealand, the United States, and other, you know, well-developed countries were to forego our industries and manufacturing to third world countries to actually build them up. And what we've done is we've got rid of a lot of our value-adding jobs, like timber industry, a lot of things that we used to make here in Australia, our car industry, all that. So we've actually foregone that, went over to other countries to build up their, you know, I suppose their standard of living, that type of thing. And that's what has happened over the years. And that's why now we're importing so much of our product and manufacturing from other countries in Australia, and we've lost industries, manufacturing, and jobs. And we're becoming poorer for it because we're not producing the productivity that we have the resources and the ability to do in this country. So we built up these nations. China's been built up as one of the greatest powers in the world, and it's getting bigger and bigger. So my concern is if we headed down this path, they actually want to impose sanctions on us to stop our import. Like steel, we import a lot of the steel. Can you imagine if we stopped the importation of steel and some of these countries' cars, where we would be? It would be very destructive. Even Australia has become a net importer of food. And you might think that's strange. but we are actually heading down this path of that we are not being self-sufficient. That's why I fight constantly for the survival of the Australian farmers. We're now importing milk from New Zealand. We used to, years ago, have 19 billion litres a year for 21 million people. Now we're under 12 million litres a year that we're producing. So in Queensland alone, we've lost from 1,500 dairy farmers down to less than 200. And the same as the you know, less of farming sector in the other states as well. So we are in dire straits, and governments have done this to us. Government policy. It's not bad management by businesses. It's government policy.
Well, I'm stunned. From a selfish New Zealand side, we always want to export more, but I am quite genuinely stunned that we need to export to Australia. I'd have thought you'd have had the likes of dairy all settled, but clearly, as you're saying, government policies have led to people. Are they leaving farming altogether, or are they switching? Yeah.
No, they have to leave it, because especially when we went through droughts here, they weren't even covering the cost of their production. So a lot of the dairy farmers have been forced out of the market. And these companies like Parmalat and different ones, Frontero, who are actually controlling, you know, where they pick up the milk, how much they pick up, it's really screwed the farmers over here. And they could not cover their cost of production. So anyway, they've had to leave the market.
Gosh, it's only a little snippet from here. We're seeing a lot of our dairy farmers converting to forestry because there's a whole lot of incentives for them to plant out their arable land. And so what we're seeing, Pauline, is beautiful, beautiful arable land now in pine trees. It's just, to me, it's crazy.
I've just got to tell you, you know, they're not encouraging that either with the forestry here in Australia. And they're quite happy for farmers to clear their land, not to grow food, but to put in solar panels. And you've got hundreds of thousands of acres covered prime agricultural, A-grade agricultural land in not only solar panels, but wind turbines. It's disgraceful.
Well, says me to you, you've got so much desert land, you could go, well, why not stick a solar panel there? But on arable, good farming, it's just, it's nonsensical. We should actually touch on, because I know you've got issues around land claims and that too, but I just thought quickly on the China stuff. AUKUS, we're having a big debate here whether we should be part of it or not, and not asking you to be part of our domestic policy per se, but your take on AUKUS from the Australian, or your senatorial position?
Yeah, look, I was pleased to hear it, that we do need to be aligned with other countries, similar values, and that who are our friends and will actually help us if war ever broke out again, which I hope never does. But the fact is that I actually, when we had the contract with France over the Barracudas, diesel electric, it was ridiculous, and they weren't going to work. They were new design that were put out, and they weren't constructed. I don't believe they're right. Actually, I went on the Collins class submarines underwater for a couple of days, and I actually got an understanding of submarines and a better understanding for it, which was important for me to make this decision. We need to have nuclear-powered subs. We can't rely on diesel electric. That's just ridiculous, especially where we're positioned in the world and the waters that we need to travel through. So I'm all for it. The problem that we have, it's so far down the track before the first one is going to be delivered to us, which is in about the 2040s. What we need to do is buy some off the shelf, and I'd like to see us buy in a couple of subs, because the Collins class are getting out of date, and the cost of maintenance to keep them viable is a big cost to the taxpayer.
Oh, massive cost, which is why, I mean, New Zealand's nuclear-free, so we're not touching submarines. For us, it's that pillar two around the intelligence sharing and other stuff, which, we've got to look after our respective backyards. And then speaking of backyards, because I'm very conscious of your time, Senator, you were talking about, obviously, farming and land, and I know from some of my reading you're seeing increased land claims at the moment. We obviously have the Treaty of Waitangi here, the engagement tension, whatever I want to say, between Māori and European, a lot of treaty settlements. Are you going through something similar at the moment?
Similar. It's been a can of worms here. It's unbelievable. Since the WIC decision and, of course, the Mabo decision and the native title that's happened there, people might get a shock that it's going on 51% of Australian land is under native title. and there's another 12% for determination. So it will end up about 62-63% are under native title. Even now, claims have been put across. There's a new claim that's come out a couple of days ago of 365,000 hectares of land from the edge of Brisbane right up Bribie Island, Caboolture, and taking all that area in. And this was handed over to them by the court system. Of course, they say it will have no impact whatsoever. It's not going to affect anything. If it's going to not going to affect anything, why have the courts pass for it to go back? This is really densely populated area. Very expensive land that we're talking about as well. So why is it then handed back if it's not going to make any damn difference? And I've seen land that's handed back to native title. We see so many places that shut down by the Aboriginals. You can't go near it. You can't, like Uluru, now it's been shut down. Ayers Rock, as far as I'm concerned. Then you have, you know, the Glasshouse Mountains. You have the Grampians. So they're shutting people out of being able to go on to these places. And it's just become ridiculous. As I said, until we actually classify as people here, I was born here. This is my country as much as any Aboriginal, and regardless of the fact that there was a, you know, going back to 1788, a lot of generations here go back to that time as well. And, you know, they've come here. And my attitude also is those migrants have come here for a new way of life. They are entitled to enjoy Australia and all of it and be treated equally after their citizenship, you know, become Australian citizens. So it just really annoys me. And this is going on more and more all the time. It's divisive, very divisive.
It's very similar here in New Zealand. There's been some really good things done, I'd have to say, in terms of settlements, but there's a lot of that division, entitlement, and real frustrations are bubbling away. Senator, yeah. Thank you so much for not only a generous amount of time, but we have covered a lot. So, look, thank you again for making the time to come in and having a chat with me.
My pleasure. Thanks very much, Simon. And I hope that we've got a lot in common. You know, Australians just think that you're, you know, although we're not related, but we feel as if we are, because Australia and New Zealand has been through so much over, you know, the years since its ANZAC and fighting the war together and everything like that. So your issues and there are similar to ours over here. So all I say to people is take an interest in your politics. Don't let them railroad you. Have a voice, have an opinion, because it's about you and your future and your generations to come.
Very, says me, very, very well put. I'd also include we're sending so many New Zealanders over to Australia at the moment.
yes, you are.
They're everywhere.
But I want to send the criminals back. I don't care what they say. I'll send the criminals back to you too.
Well, that's been a contentious one here, but at the end of the day, this is your sovereign choice. Australia's allowed to send people back. It's something for New Zealand to manage.
Well, they want to go back kicking and screaming too, but and they use our court systems, which cost us a fortune. But it's the way it is. It's that was my policy. If you had a criminal offence carried more than 12 months and you're not an Australian citizen, then I don't want you here. I'm sick of people coming here from other countries and just, you know, and I'm not just picking on New Zealand, but it's other places, other countries that come here and they think they can bring out their drugs, their ideologies from and their own cultures and their own beliefs from their countries to Australia. I don't want those type of people here. You know, I want very inclusive. I want a country that we don't have racial divisions, we don't have problems, we have people who adhere to the one law, and that's the Australian law.
Well, it's how we've built our respective nations. Pauline, thank you so much for your time. It's really appreciated.
Thanks, Simon. Bye-bye.
That was Senator Pauline Hanson from Australia who just joined me. She's going to be speaking at the Asia Pacific Security Innovation Forum in late August. It's known by the acronym APSI. So if you want to check out more about that summit and her speaking, check out apsisummit.com. So that's APSISummit.com. So check that out. And if you have any thoughts or questions around the interview, get in touch. inbox@realitycheck.radio or text 2057.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.